Well, after last night, I hope we can be confident that the angels aren't going to send any thunder and lightning and rain tonight. I'm just hoping we don't see a little bit of red and orangey stuff coming over the hill right there. And yeah, I think they would get a good laugh out of that one, James. That's right. Anyways, yes. We had quite a discussion yesterday about whether our angels ever laugh at some of the things that happen. And I'm sure they do. All right, so what I want to do today is pick it up where we were yesterday, eventually. But first of all, I probably should have thrown this in yesterday because it was in our readings recently in Matthew 18. But I think some of you noticed it there when you were doing the readings in Matthew 18, because Jesus warned the people at that time to not in any way offend one of the little ones after he had put a child in their midst as well, because he said in verse 10, "Take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I say to you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven." And so I really do believe that when Jesus said that, this is probably our best passage to indicate that everybody has an angel working with them all the time. An angel has to be there to know what's happening. An angel has to be there for you to protect you and to guide you and direct you into the ways. And so I'm sure that that's the case in this situation, that everybody has an angel. And it's not just that you have an angel who is with you right now, but your angel reports to heaven, to the presence of God, to check in and find out how things are going and what they should be doing in your life. That is really a nice, comforting thing to understand that that's the kind of relationship they have, that that angel can go to heaven anytime they want and get help and get some suggestions about what they can do with us. And I'm sure that they do. So be aware of that, and be aware that that's the case for everybody here. So what you don't want to do is ever do put downs and treat another person in such a way that you frustrate the angel working with them, because that's another perspective you learn to have, is that not only do I have an angel working with me, but so do all of you. And we don't want to frustrate the work of those angels. And I really don't believe that the angels know that final outcome. I don't think they do, because that would take away a lot of the motivation, I think, for most of us, if you already knew the outcome of the game. Like, suppose you went out there to play the final championship volleyball game, and you could look into the future, and you already realized that Micah's team would lose by 5. And it's like, why would we even go out there and try? It's like, you would just lose all your motivation, and you'd probably be slamming them into the net and hitting way out into the field. And yeah, so that isn't really what we want. You want the fact that it's a challenge. Now, we left off yesterday with the Lord saying that, with the three angels. Remember, the three angels came down, they talked to Abraham, they said he was going to have a son, they reported that to Abraham and Sarah, and then the angels had that conversation. The three of them got together, and they had a conversation before they go down to Sodom, and they say, really, should we tell Abraham what we're going to do? And they decide, of course we should. He's our friend. Or as Rotherham has it, he has become our intimate friend. And so, of course, they decided, all right, we got to tell him. So one angel stays behind, the other two angels go on to Sodom and Gomorrah. And the one who stays behind, in this case, they made their decision about the fact, based on the fact that they had to go down to Sodom and Gomorrah and find out how bad is it. I think that's fun to look at, that the angels right now, they don't know what's happening all these other places around the world. They have to hear about it from other angels. They're not omnipresent. So if an angel is here right now with us today, they don't know what's happening in, you know, in the United States or in other cities in Canada or all the places around the world. They're not physically there. And so when they want to find out, they actually come down to see if the situation is the way it is. I think there's a case in Genesis 11 where the same thing happens. They come down to find out if it is as bad as they have heard. And so they did. And that way they say, if not, I will know. And that's how they find out. They're not like God. They're not omnipresent like that. So the two men turned away from there and went down to Sodom. But Abraham still stands before the Lord. He's still standing there before the angel of the Lord, or the angel of Yahweh in this case. And that's where we sort of left them yesterday. Abraham then has his conversation about, won't the judge of all the earth do right? He finds out, you're really going to wipe out all of Sodom? Now, you know, how can you do that? You know, we split up years ago because there wasn't enough room for my men and Lot's men. That's how many people he had in his family at that time. And how can it be that all of them are gone? But it shows you how Lot had moved his way into isolation, had really become disconnected from Abraham. And Abraham wasn't even aware of how bad things were in the family of Lot. And so Abraham has this conversation with the angel about, well, what if there's 50? What if there's 40? What if there's 30? And so on. And I don't really believe that the angel has to go back up to heaven every time a question is asked. Like, what if there's 40? And he says to Abraham, well, wait a second. I got to go transform to heaven and ask God and find out if we can let the city go if there's 40. It doesn't work that way. Instead, the angel has been empowered to make decisions about this specific situation within the realm of God's framework. And that is what these angels can do. And so the angel says, if I find 50, then I'll spare all the places for their sakes. And Abraham, you know, goes on and he says, all right, you know, I'm indeed I whom but dust and ashes have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord. And in this case here, it's interesting that this is the first place in the Hebrew Bible where the Sopharim got a little frustrated when they were copying Hebrew Bibles, all the scribes that would copy the Bibles day after day. They got frustrated about the fact that it's confusing because Abraham's still standing before the Lord. Abraham's having a discussion with him, and it's sounding like the angel is changing his mind, and they didn't understand that it was an angel. They thought it was God, and they don't like the idea that God is like altering his mind in relation to Abraham. So they changed the word Lord right there. They changed it in your Bibles to lowercase, even though originally in the Hebrew text it was Yahweh at that point. But what I find really fascinating about this is we've had some discussions this week about whether or not we pray just for ourselves or whether we pray because God listens to our prayers and alters pathways. To me, this whole story is a great case of looking at how angels, how God is willing to alter his already described pathway if situations change. This is what we would call conditional prophecies, to where God says, here's what I'm going to do. Like when you're reading Jeremiah right now, and God says to Jeremiah, here's what I intend to do. I'm going to bring a nation down from the north. I'm going to wipe you all out. But at the same time, God leaves the door open for the fact that, well, this doesn't have to happen if you change your ways. And this, in this case here, you're seeing the same thing, that you can alter the events of the future that God has already said are a pathway we're going to go down. And we can alter that with the power of prayer. And that's why we pray to God. That is one of the reasons why we talk to him. And angels will do that. Angels will respond to our prayers. They listen as well. And they're waiting to hear that we are serious, that we're honest, that we're repentant, that we're working for God, that we have God's people at heart, not just our own selfish ways. And they do alter their plans sometimes. And so he says, all right, if I find 50 righteous, I'll spare the place for all their sakes. If you're ever interested in finding the places where the Sopharim changed the Hebrew text, I would suggest today just Googling it, because it's out on the internet very clearly. It used to be you had to look up Bullinger's Companion Bible to find it, but now it's out there all over the place. But the very first cases where it actually happens that you probably can't see very well up there are Genesis 18 and then Genesis 19, because this story about the angels bothered the copiers. They didn't understand how this could be Yahweh all the way through. And it's a great one to look at because it illustrates how Yahweh really works, how the Yahweh angels actually work. So they admit that they changed the name Yahweh in this case to Adonai in all those different places. The first third ones in Genesis 18, 19. After that, it's a lot of cases where God would repent or God would change his mind. Or when Moses, in some of these times when Moses is talking to God in the fiery bush and so on. And you can look them up sometime and just see like why they would have felt it necessary to change. But for some reason, they did. Whoops, too far. Come back here. So what happens? So Abraham's still talking to the angel of the Lord in this case, and he finally gets him down to 10. And then the angel goes at that point, and Abraham's probably feeling good, pretty good, that there's got to be at least 10 righteous people there. And the angel's going to, we never hear actually what happens to that exact angel again in this case in the story. But the other two angels now, pick them up and watch what they do down in Sodom. So the two angels came to Sodom in verse 1 in the evening, and Lot's sitting in the gate of Sodom. And Lot sees him, he rises up, he bows himself with his face to the ground, and he says, "Hear now, my lords," which is Adonai there, and he asks them to come to his house and spend the night, and he's going to wash their feet. He's going to show them the traditional, typical, customary things that people in the Middle East do. They still do this to this day when you go to their homes. They're very hospitable, and he wants them to spend the night with him, because he realizes it's not a good place for them to spend the night out into the open square. And then he says, well, then you can rise early and go on your way. And he has no idea at this point who in the world they are. This is entertaining angels unawares. Now, these angels say, all right, no, we don't want to spend the night in your house. We want to spend the night out in the open square, because they had come down to find out, is it as bad as we have heard? And they're going to find out, all right. So Lot insists, and so what did they do? They turned into him and entered his house, and he made him a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. And again, I think it's really fun to look at how angels accommodate our requests. They are so considerate. They're so compassionate towards us that here they are coming down on a mission to find out what they're going to do. And they want to stay the night in the open square to find out. But Lot, he just keeps asking and he prevails against it. And finally they say, okay, Lot, we'll come into your house. And they'll abide by his wishes. These are angels who could easily just overpower and show their glory and just like really make it so that Lot would just back off and do whatever they said. But that's not how they treat human people who are of the family of God. They don't usually do that. So they come in, they take their time, they're going to spend the night there, they eat a meal with them, and they're very, very patient. Not at all the way I would be. I would want to go down and find out and then report back and say, yeah, it's as bad as we heard. But they're not like that. They're willing to be very patient with people. So in the morning, when the morning dawns, the angels urge Lot, because they gave him all night. They said, you go out and find everybody you can overnight, everybody you think you can get together to save, bring them all together, and we'll save them. And Lot tries, and he really can't impact the people. So in the morning, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. So here's the angels. Come down to find out how bad it is. Now they know. In the morning, they're ready to go. They're ready to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And they tell Lot, come on, Lot, get up. Let's go. No time for breakfast. We got to get out of here. And what does he do? Verse 16, he lingered. And look at what happens. The men took the hand. They take hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters. Now, can you imagine? Here's the two men that went down there. They didn't really need the third angel at this point. And the two angels, each of them grabs one of Lot's daughters, and the other one grabs Lot and his wife, and they literally grab them by the hands, and they drag them out of the city and say, we got to go, we got to go. And they get them out of there. And they brought him out and set him outside the city. And when they get out there, they say to Lot, escape for your life. You know, don't look back behind you or stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. That's their message to Lot. And you look at this, but normally angels don't force their way against our free will. But in this case, angels are trying to save a man who they know is a righteous person who's gotten himself hung up in this situation. He probably had prayed about wishing he could get out of it. And now he's frustrated. You know, all he's got left is his wife and his two daughters, and that's all. And now they're being told to get out of the city and escape. And the angels show unbelievable compassion and patience for Lot to get him out of that city. And that is what they do. So as they're on their way out, look at what happened. Well, in this case here, I threw in the passage just to remind us in 2 Peter that, you know, when Peter talks about the event of Sodom and Gomorrah, he makes it so clear to all of us, like Paul does in Hebrews 11 about Samson, and reminds us that Samson was a righteous man, because otherwise we probably think he wasn't. But look at how Peter, in 2 Peter 2, says, look at that God delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. This was his mindset that you wouldn't necessarily know just reading through Genesis 18 and 19. But here's the divine account. He was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man, that's the second time he calls him righteous, dwelling among them, tormented his righteous soul. That's the third time he throws it in there, from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. So three times Peter has to remind us that Lot was a righteous man, frustrated by what he was going through and looking for a way out of it, but not knowing how to do it. And I really don't think most of us would have picked that up reading through Genesis 18, 19 just by reading the text. So it's good we have Peter's comment. So here he is. Lot's just been saved out of Sodom. They're walking out. The angel's taking them by the hand. And they're walking away from the city. And they tell him to, like, get going, run, and get up there into the mountains before this destruction comes down. And Lot turns to the angels. And this is where the Sopherim changed it, because they couldn't understand how he could refer to them at this point as, please know my lords. The original actually has Yahweh there. Now, Lot knows they're angels at this point because of what they had done in blinding the people and all that. He realizes now these are angels. And so when he talks to them, he says, please know my Yahweh. Indeed, now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. See, look at this city over here. That's far enough. I can just go to that one. It's just a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. Can you imagine doing that with angels? With angels who have such power and authority, and they've just saved you out of a situation. And Lot just tells him, well, I don't really want to do what you said about going up in the mountains. Can't I just go over to that city over there? And you think, like, you know, if that was us, a lot of us would just say, Lot, what'd I tell you to do? Get up over there to the mountains before you get consumed. And instead, that's not how the angels treat him. And the angel says to him, see, I have favored you concerning this thing also, in that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken. And here's another case of angels altering the pathway. They've altered the plan because of something that Lot has asked for them. And I think this is amazing to look at. As you know, as Bible people, we can alter God's pathways. You have the power of prayer to talk to God about people that are sick, about situations that you're in. And God can alter pathways sometimes. Not all the time, but there are some times where he can. So the angel said to him, hurry up and escape there, because I can't do anything until you arrive there. And that city was called Zoar. So it's fun to watch that these are God's family members. This is how they behave with people. They don't yell at people. They don't tell people, come on, what's your problem? Get up and get going. They don't tell them, you know, see, I told you so. They don't do those kind of things. They're kind. They're compassionate. They're considerate. And that's why they're eternal members of God's family. And this is what we have to be practicing in this life now. This is what angels do, and this is what we want to do. So they did. They overthrew those cities, all the plain, in verse 25, the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife looked back behind him and became a pillar of salt. Now, can you imagine if you were the angel who had been working with Lot's wife? How would you feel? How would you feel? I don't think the angel knew this ahead of time. They don't have God's foreknowledge like he does. They have to be present to see things. Somebody may have worked with this woman for years, an angel, trying to save her, and they tell him, don't look back. Don't look back. And she looks back. And one of those angels had to turn her into a pillar of salt. And that shows you how we can frustrate angels. We can disappoint angels. We can let them down. All their work that they've been doing and all their efforts they put into us to try to save us and to try to bring us and guide us into God's family, we can really disappoint them. And we don't want to do that. You know, we after years of patient work with people, angels could be very frustrated over the fact that we make bad choices. We go a different pathway than they were hoping that we would go. And in this case, it was frustrating to Lot. It was frustrating to the angels because they were hoping that they could get her out of the city as well. So some of the things that we found out from Genesis 18 and 19, I put this summary in there because this is probably the best place to go in our Bibles to learn things about angels, how they interact, and what they're really like. They can appear as mortal men and totally fool people where you have no idea they're angels. They do want to save us. That's their goal. They are ministering spirits sent forth to minister for those who are the heirs of salvation. You can develop a personal relationship with an angel. You can, even though you may not see them. You can still be aware of their presence. You can still talk to them. You can still thank them for what they're doing. These are all things you can do now today because you feel their presence with you. They need to be able to read our thoughts. Angels know what they're thinking. They knew that Sarah laughed in her heart, and they knew that she called Abraham Lord. And they have to know what we're thinking, because although we can fool one another and we can show up to all these different activities and we think that we're working away, instead we might be thinking about what's the next move on that chessboard I'm going to make. And the angels know those things in our lives. Not really that, but you know, they know if we're sitting there thinking about what am I going to do next week when I go home? What are these plans that I have? Even though I've been here at camp this week, I've got all this other stuff I want to do. And when we're discussing with one another and handling situations, they know our motives. They know what we're thinking, and they have to in order to be able to help us. They need to be present to know what's happening. They don't know what's going on somewhere else. They actually come down to find out. They go places with us to find out what we are doing. And they are willing to reason with us. When we talk to God, He's willing to alter pathways. He changes plans that angels were going to do, that they were told to do, when we come up with something that God is willing to respond to. And sometimes they can accommodate us. Sometimes. Not always, but there are times where they can accommodate and they are willing to alter their pathways. And they do discuss with one another to make decisions. I think that's fascinating. I think that's why you have to practice teamwork in this life. You can't be somebody who goes it alone. You can't be the kind of person that is just so worried about your personal purity, you move off into isolation to make sure you don't get contaminated by anybody else, and you don't go talk to any Christadelphians, and you just like live your life in your little bubble of the world. We are practicing now about how to get along with people. How do you work in a committee? How do you work with a group of people in ecclesial life, in CYC, and learn to work with them in such a way that everybody is accommodated, and we all get along because we have the same goal. And look at how patient and merciful angels are. This is how God's family members behave. And we have to practice that, brothers and sisters and young people. You have to. Because when you become immortal and you're given an immortal body, God doesn't just all of a sudden change your mind and give you a spiritual mind. He's been giving us this opportunity now to develop that spiritual mind. We have to want to be like this. We want to be like these angels, be patient like them, and kind and merciful and compassionate. That is the way they are with us, and that's the way we got to practice being as well. Later on in Abraham's life, you know, there's other places where he talks about angels besides just Genesis 18 and 19. But you remember the story when he wants to get a wife for Isaac, and he sends his servant over there to find a wife for Isaac. And he tells him in verse 7 of Genesis 24, "The Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my family, who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you." So it's okay. I'm confident he's going to send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. And Eliezer comes back and he says, "Well, what if the woman doesn't want to follow me?" And he says to him, "Well, the Lord before whom I walk will send his angel with you and prosper your way." This is the kind of relationship Abraham had with angels. He knew an angel would go with him. He knew an angel would work in this scenario and that the angel would prosper his way. But you're not going to take a son from the Canaanites and from the people of this land. Abraham was so in touch with angels, he was confident that they would take care of the situation. And, you know, if you follow that through, Eliezer actually bought into it as well. Because when he gets up there and he's recounting the stories up there, he says the exact same thing. That the angels were going to take care of this, and this is what God did. And that's why they came back with Rebekah. This one in 1 Kings 19, I found, here's another fascinating story about how angels work with us, and they really are our friends. They don't hate us. They don't want to judge us. They just want to help us be saved. 1 Kings 19 is about Elijah after he's gone through the whole incident of the Mount Carmel battle, you know, and the fire coming down from heaven, and he's all pumped up and excited. He's running before Ahab through the valley on the way down, and he's thinking, this is it. This is the day. We've waited 3.5 years of no rain so that we could finally convert the nation and everybody will be on our side. And he gets down there and finds out Jezebel, who's probably as bad as Delilah in our studies this morning, she's got it all under control, and she's gonna kill him. And he's frustrated because all the things he'd worked for and hoped for are all falling apart. And he just thinks, it's hopeless. It's a lost cause. 3.5 years I've been trying. Nobody's responded. They don't really care. I'm the only one left. And so he comes down and he's on his way to Mount Sinai. That's where he's going. He's going to come down to Mount Sinai and he's going to talk to God at Mount Sinai. And so he goes a day's journey into the wilderness. He sits down under the broom tree and he prayed that he might die. And he says, "It's enough. Now, Lord, take away my life, for I'm no better than my fathers. You know, I can't do any better than they did. I haven't made any big impact on the community. I haven't been able to help save anybody. It's just a lost cause. It's hopeless." And as he lay down and he slept under the broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." And he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel waits as he lays down and sleeps, and the angel's still there. He comes back the second time and touches him and says, "Arise and eat, because the journey's too great for you. It's okay. You're going down to Mount Sinai. I'll help you get down there. You're not going to make it unless you eat and drink something." And so the angel, in his compassion, he feeds this man, gives him food and water, and helps him on his journey, even though, what's Elijah going down to Mount Sinai for? What's he want to do down there? Why did he go down to Mount Sinai? Well, he does want to die, but he wants to go down to Mount Sinai because Moses was on Mount Sinai. And why is he going down to Mount Sinai? He wants to talk to God at Mount Sinai. What had God said to Moses that we're going to look at in a little bit? What had the angel told Moses up on Mount Sinai when the people had rebelled? What had he told them? "Stand aside, I'll wipe them all out, and I'll make of you a great nation." Now, you might think that's speculation, but how do we know for sure that that's why Elijah's going down to Mount Sinai? How do we know? Romans 11 and verse 1. Paul actually says in Romans 11 and verse 1 about Elijah that he went down to intercede against Israel. And you see the discussion that he has with God. I'm the only one left. You know, I'm the only one left. The other rest of these people, they're lost. And he doesn't even realize there's 7,000 people that had not bowed to Baal. So we know this is Elijah's mindset. So here he is on his way down to Mount Sinai. He wants to come down there to plead with God to wipe the people out. And the angel can read his thoughts. And yet this angel is feeding him, giving him water to drink, helping him and saying, "Okay, you go ahead, you continue on your journey. I'm going to let this play out and we're going to deal with it as it goes along." This is the way angels are. They don't force their will on us. They let these things play out so that they can help us through these situations. Another one like this that actually I think what Elijah was thinking about was this incident back here in Exodus 33 when Moses was talking with the angel. And in Exodus 33, the angel said to Moses, "Depart and go up from here, you and the people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, to a land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying to your descendants, I will give it. And I will send my angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanites, Amorites, the Hittites, and so on. So go up to this land flowing with milk and honey." But look at verse 3. "For I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way. For you are a stiff-necked people." Now, who says this to Moses? Who's talking to him? Who is it? It's an angel. This is the angel that had been with Moses from the beginning. The angel that had appeared to him in the burning bush. The angel that was there in Exodus 20 and issued out when God spoke the Ten Commandments. And Stephen says that it was an angel with Moses on the mount. This angel says, "I'm going to send another angel before you, and he'll take you into the land. But I'm not going with you, because I've seen all this stuff, and if I go with you, I'll probably wipe you out. You know, I'll probably do what I said I was going to do. Stand aside, Moses, and I'll wipe you, all those people out, and I'll make of you a great nation." So, what happens here? It comes to pass when Moses entered the tabernacle, and the pillar of the cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, that the Lord talked with Moses. So here he is, standing there talking with the angel. "And all the people saw the pillar of the cloud standing at the tabernacle. And all the people rose and worshiped, each man in his tent. And the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. And then he would return to the camp. See, Moses had developed a personal relationship with this angel. He had been there all along from the beginning in the life of Moses. And this angel had said to Moses, you're going to go and deliver these people and you're going to get them out. And he had been there with them through all those events of the plagues and all the things that happened with Pharaoh and all this wandering in the wilderness. And now this angel has told Moses that I'm going to send another angel, because if I go with you, I will wipe you out. And so in Exodus 33, Moses then talks to him and says, you say to me in verse 12, bring up this people. But you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name. See, this angel comes to Moses and says, I know you, but I can't go in this midst because I'll probably wipe these people out and I'll send somebody else. And Moses says, you haven't even told me who this other one is. I don't know this other angel. I don't know who it is. And he says, you know, you haven't even told me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, and you also have found grace in my sight. See, look at this interaction you and I have. He appeals to the angel, says, you've told me I find grace in your sight. I know you. I've worked with you. Don't send somebody else. You come with us. And look at verse 13. Now, therefore, I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way, that I may know you and that I might find grace in your sight, and consider that this nation is your people. This is what he throws back at him. And then the angel responds in verse 14. He said, all right, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And Moses says, well, look, if your presence doesn't go with us, don't even bring us up from here. You know, for how would I know that these are your people and we found grace in your sight, except you go with us. So we shall be separate, your people and I, from all the people who are on the face of the earth. This is such a fascinating discussion between Moses and an angel, appealing to this angel to don't give up on us. Stick with us and come with us. And he really wanted this angel to stick with him. And so finally, the Lord says to Moses in verse 17, and this is the part I find most interesting. He says, look, okay, you've made your appeal. I will also do this thing that you've spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. And at that point, the angel let Moses know, I will go with you. I'm not going to send somebody else. I'll go with you, and I'll take you into the land. And Moses just says at that point, oh, you know, this is when he asks, show me your glory. Show me your goodness. You know, this is an angel that he had come to know and trust. It was his friend, because angels can become our friends when we develop a relationship with them. We thank them for what they've done. We appreciate the work that they're doing in our life. And this angel mercifully agreed to stick with Moses and the people, and he took them in the land. And probably this angel was Michael, probably. And I don't know if we know that for sure, but in Daniel chapter 12, when Michael arises, who has charge of your people, it seems that Michael has been the one that had stuck with them all along. Now, in Exodus 12, I want to look at an event previous to this, because sometimes we end up thinking, well, look at the advantage these people had. Moses got to talk to an angel. Abraham got to talk to an angel. Don't you think, Poppy, if you could just talk to an angel, that would make a big difference in your life, and you would just like, wow, that would be the clincher, wouldn't it? Yeah, and I remember thinking that. I just thought, why can't we all talk to angels like they did? And you think, like, this is going to make the biggest difference in my life. And so the Bible threw in this story about Nadab and Abihu, just so that if we're thinking that way, we realize that it doesn't work with everybody, and it isn't always going to make that big difference. Are we okay?
Yep.
I thought maybe outside meetings weren't acceptable. You got to go in and suffer the word of exhortation inside the building. Well, I'll be glad to go out on the lake right now, and I can talk to you from the lake. Just bring the projector, okay? So in Exodus 24, this is when the people were gathered at the foot of the mountain, and God invited people up besides Moses up to the mountain. And so the angel said to him, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and the 70 elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him. So Moses goes up, and also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 elders of Israel. and they saw the God of Israel. Now, that's not Yahweh, our God who lives in heaven. That's not our Father who lives in heaven. That's the angel who had been working with them. And there under his feet was this paved work of sapphire and stone. It was like the very heavens in its clarity. But on the nobles of the children of Israel, he did not lay his hand. So they saw God and they ate and drank. Now, this is why Manoah should have known that other people in the past have seen the glory of God when angels appear and they don't die just because they saw an angel. And so this is what they were invited to. God says, look, take the leaders, bring them up on the mountain, and we'll let them experience this kind of situation that you've had. And they get to see the glory of the angel, and they sit down and they have a fellowship meal with the angel. Now, don't you think that would change your life? I mean, I think it would change mine. But you know what happens is over time goes by, and you sort of forget. You don't remember what happened last year as much, the year before. And if it isn't an ongoing thing all the time, things can happen to where you forget events like this. So by the time you run into Leviticus 10, where God is now, the tabernacle is finished, the tabernacle is done at the end of the first year, and now they're going to start using the tabernacle, and God gives them the rules about how to use it in Leviticus 1-7, and all the priests are now consecrated, and that was what? How many priests were there at this point in time? There's Aaron, high priest. How many kids did Aaron have? How many kids? Four, right? Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. That's it, just four kids. So now there's five priests in the whole nation that God has picked. These are the ones that he's chosen to be the priestly family of Aaron's family. That's all, just five. And so they go through this whole thing in Leviticus 7 and 8 and 9. They go through a whole week of like consecrating the priests. So he takes all five of them and they go through special sacrifices. They go through all these events. It's like a 7-day event. And then on the 8th day, what are they going to do? Leviticus 10. What were they supposed to do on the 8th day? This is the very first time that Aaron is going to operate as high priest of the nation. And he's going to do the Day of Atonement. No, he's going to operate as high priest at this point. And so he goes through the processes with the nation. It's the first time he's really done this. And as he's going through the whole process, two of his boys come out, two of the five that are going to be the priests. And they're sitting there offering on their incense in Leviticus 10 right there. They put incense on their censers and they offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire goes out from the Lord and consumes them and they're dead. Just like that. On the very first day that Aaron's priesthood was in place. I can't figure out yet why Paul didn't bring this up in the letter to the Hebrews. To me, it's like one of the fascinating examples of the failure of the law. On the very first day Aaron was supposed to operate as priest, the whole thing failed. Two of his kids die, and then when they go to find the goat of the sin offering, what's Aaron supposed to do with the goat? If the blood doesn't go into the most holy place, what is he supposed to do? He's supposed to eat it. And Moses is looking all around. Where's the goat? Where's the goat? What'd you do with the goat? You're supposed to, as high priest of the nation, you're supposed to ritualistically bear the sin of the people. You're supposed to eat the goat. That's the rules. And Aaron looks at Moses and says, Moses, two of my kids just died today. Do you really think I can operate as high priest? And with that, Moses is content. And he realized, you got a point. But you know, you watch these events take place. This is what angels do. And we think sometimes that if I could just talk to an angel, if I could just see an angel one day, this would like make the biggest difference in my life. And these fellas saw an angel. They went up on the mountain. They sat down and had a fellowship meal with an angel. And now look at what they're already doing just a few months later. They didn't take the truth seriously. They drank way too much when they were going through the process of the 7-day consecration. And they come out and they're offering probably some alcoholic beverages and the fire is going up and they're thinking, oh, this is cool. It's like fun and games, a bit like Samson in a sense. But they had terrible intentions and God strikes them dead. And then in Leviticus 10, you get all those restrictions about, oh no, from now on, you're not going to be drinking alcoholic beverages when you're operating in my temple, in my tabernacle. You're not going to do that. And that all comes on the heels of this whole event here in Leviticus 10. So don't think that if you could just see an angel that all of a sudden that would fix everything and your life would be different for the rest of your life. It just doesn't last. It's the still small voice that Elijah had to learn about that goes consistently at work in our lives and in the work of God and reading his Bible and working in his ecclesia. These are the things that change our life. There's a story in Judges 6. This is the one about Gideon, and probably most of you got this one in Sunday school lessons, right? But it's fun to look at it from the perspective of the angels. So in Judges 6 and verse 11, the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joaz the Abiezerite. And while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. So here he is, hid from the Midianites, scared stiff. They're going to come in and get him. And so they're threshing wheat in a winepress, which is crazy because the winepress would be down low. There's no wind, and you really, it wouldn't be a very good place to thresh the wheat. But the angel of the Lord appears to him, and he says, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." Now, see, this is one of the things that angels try to do. They try to encourage us for the work that they have lined up for us. This angel comes in enthusiastically talking to Gideon. He doesn't just show up and say, "Hey, Gideon, God's got a job for you to do. Do you think you could get up and get going?" That isn't how angels show up. They're excited. They care. You might look at this and say, "Well, this is just a minor event. He's going to go fight the Midianites." They're excited about the work they're doing. This is the way angels behave. They get excited. And so should we in our work in the truth. And so he says to him, "Well, if I found favor in your sight, show me a sign that it's you who talk with me." So here's Gideon dealing with an angel. And again, you have a human person appealing to an angel saying, "Well, can you do me a favor and just like verify that you really are going to work with me?" And he says, "Don't depart from here, I pray, until I come before you and bring out my offering and set it before you." And he said, "I will wait until you come back." Can you imagine talking to an angel and saying, "Will you wait for me? We just like sit here for a minute. I want to go do something and come back and I'll talk to you later." Angels are unbelievably patient. Patient. Unbelievable. It blows my mind as to how patient they are with human people. And we have to practice to be that way. People, when we come to work with them, we can't just come in and say real quickly that, "Here's what I want you to do. Here's why. And let's get it done." And just expect something's going to happen. In CYC and in our ecclesias, we have to be patient with people. We have to give them time sometimes for their faith to grow. We can't just expect things to happen instantaneously and just like, "I don't have time to wait for this." That is not the way they are. So the angel of God says to him in verse 20, "Take the meat, the unleavened bread, and lay them on the rock, and I'll pour out the broth." And he did so. And the angel puts his staff at the end there, and he touches it, and whew, he consumes the meat and the unleavened bread. And then the angel of the Lord departs out of his sight. And now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. Very similar to what happened with Manoah. And Gideon says, "Alas, I've seen the Lord God, for I've seen the angel of the Lord face to face." And he's probably wondering the same thing that some of the others had. But angels aren't there, as Manoah's wife says. They're not there to kill us. They're not there to strike us down. They're not there to punish us. They're there to encourage us, to work with us. They show compassion and kindness because they want us to get work done for God. In Daniel chapter 8, this is the one where Gabriel came to where Daniel was, and he was afraid and fell on his face. But Gabriel says to him, "Understand, son of man, the vision refers to the time of the end." Gabriel, a lot of times, he shows up when he's going to communicate things to Daniel and some of the others. And Daniel's in this deep sleep, and his face is to the ground. But Gabriel touches him, and he makes him stand upright, and he says to him, "Look, I am making known to you what will happen in the latter days of the indignation, for the appointed time of the end shall be." And that's the way angels really are. They really want to help us. They don't want us to be spooked out by them. They come to help us understand. They come to work in our lives to guide us and to direct us into God's family. That is what they're trying to do, the ministering spirits. And in this case, that's what this angel did. It was like a friend of Daniel's. And he came here when Daniel was frustrated and was trying to try to help him to understand what was going to happen in the latter days. So when you look at some of the stories we've looked at tonight, at least, I think you can walk away pretty confident, especially from the Abraham and Lot and stories there, that the angels do respond to our desires and our prayers. So don't give up. When we talk to God in prayer and we ask for God's help, when we ask to alter a pathway, there are times where God lets the angels do that, or he sends them to do that. Exactly how it works, I don't know. But angels sometimes have the ability to alter those pathways. And that's why we talk to God. Don't give up. Remember that parable in the New Testament about, some people call it like the unjust judge, but I like to call it the persistent woman, where Jesus told that parable in Luke 11 to the effect that we ought to pray and pray and don't lose heart. And he tells the parable about the lady that kept coming before the judge and begging him and begging him and begging him. And finally, the judge gave in to her. And that was a story that was given to tell us to keep asking God. Don't give up, because God can alter pathways when we keep coming to him in prayer. The angels are very merciful, very merciful. But as we saw yesterday, they extend mercy to those whose hearts are loyal to God, to people who love God, the people who are walking in God's pathways. They can do that. They're looking for people that want to do that. But they can't extend mercy to people who are constantly looking back in life, wishing they could have all the pleasures of this world and enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. That must really frustrate them as to why we don't get it. Why can't we see that what they're offering us is so much beyond a momentary pleasure of this life? And angels are extremely patient with people. They give us lots of time to learn, to grow, and we have to be that way with people too. They give us years to learn things. Look at how they worked with Samson and gave him so much time to experience and to go through events of life. And we have to be patient like them with other people. We can't get frustrated when we go back to our CYCs and we try to implement something and we want to get everybody on board and we think like everybody should jump on this idea and do it, and not everybody's ready for that. And we have to realize that, well, we got to be patient. If God gives us some who are ready to jump on it, that's great. But for others, others need more time. Some people need to go through the highs and the lows of life, and they have to go through experience of making mistakes in order for them to learn the lessons like Samson did. Not everybody just keeps going up a consistent pathway, but angels are willing to patiently work with that. And God's family members have to be that way. We can't be so impatient with people, wanting things to happen right now, right away, because they're so patient with us. And don't forget, now is our time to practice living like the angels. If you want God to invite you into his family forever, show God you want to be there. Show him you want to be there by, when you go home next week, practice living like angels. Treat people like the angels do. Research the angels. Find out how they behave. How are we supposed to behave in the household of God? And then pray for God's help to do it. Because if you live like angels now, God will willingly invite you into his eternal family, where you get to join the angels and join his family forever. And what a great opportunity we have. And we'll leave it at that for tonight.